to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 456, to be broadcast Wednesday, October 1st, 2025, on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment. I might be able to respond. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, then and you're listening on Facebook Live, you can make your comment right down here below, or you can just send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's Rant of the Week. Well, this one came out in last week's Daily Campus, right up here on UConn's campus. Scooters on campus. So we're going to talk a little bit about those e-scooters that are all over the campus and the people that are being run down by them. And we'll get a little ranty about this one today because it is a personal rant of mine of having e-bikes and e-scooters and even bicycles on sidewalks on the campus. But anyway, we'll discuss this today and I'll ask you how you're feeling about this whole idea. There was an article, like I said, that came out in the Daily Campus this week or last week, and I just wanted to go over a few things. And a quick glance at the UConn Parking Services website tells us that these problems should be easily avoidable. As it states, the operation of or parking of motorized vehicles on sidewalks, lawns, and within landscaped areas of campus is unlawful. Sort of. Anyway, we'll get to that. UConn's policy further bans parking scooters at bike racks or on sidewalks. Breaking either rule is meant to incur the impoundment of the vehicle. Well, anyway, we'll go over a few things here and we'll talk about that. And then the next thing is New York Times just released something about bicycle racing and the safety issues therefore involved with it. Professional bike racers are dying out in the streets. And anyway, I'll cover a little bit of that article too, just so we can go over some current events that are happening right now. On a positive side, the World Championships. Did you get a chance to see it? Pretty cool stuff. There was some good racing for sure. There was some, well, let's call it predictable racing, of course, too. We'll get back on that one in a bit. And I got to tell you, the junior men's race was really exciting. But anyway, how safe is bike racing? Anyway, I'm going back to that. Anyway, the other positive thing that I have to mention is I got the okay last week to get back out on my bike on the road. Yay. Very, very good. So after 90 days after my cervical fusion of my neck, they're telling me that it's okay to ride my bike on the road. Just be careful, as my surgeon says. He doesn't want me to undo anything that he did. And so I am also of that feeling because I never want to ever go through this again. This was just really, really difficult. So the good news is I can get back on my bike. The bad news is I don't have a whole lot of time to ride my bike right now because I got so many things on my schedule, including an upcoming cyclocross race, another positive side, on October 11th right here in Mansfield at Mansfield Hollow State Park. And I've been working on that all day today, which is why I am up on Facebook Live right now. Mechanical Minute and Bike Tips. Okay, so you want to be a bike technician, right? You want to be a, well, you know, I have a little site here I found that will basically, make sure I get here, train in the mountain bike capital of the world to be a bicycle technician. How about that? So this is within Northwest Arkansas along with Missouri, and must be down there around the that whole Walmart thing that goes on down in Arkansas. Anyway, they're really building a mecca down there. It's kind of interesting. But they're going to offer you access to affordable industry recognized bicycle technicians training that can enhance your hobby or put you on the trail to a career in the cycling industry. Career in the cycling industry, I don't know. But, you know, maybe there's still, you know, hope out there for that sort of thing. I'll tell you one thing, if you learn how to fix the bikes, you probably have a better chance at staying in the industry than you would if you're just going to be selling the bikes. The industry is really, really shaky at the moment. But a good bike shop with good technicians involved, that definitely is something that is not going to go away. I don't think it'll ever go away because people still need to get things fixed no matter what. So what you would be getting is a Bicycle Industry Employers Association, BIEA, accredited certification in bicycle assembly and repair and gained skills in bicycle mechanics, wheel repair and assembly, bearing and suspension systems, service department operations, electric bikes and more. So this offers pathways to earn an Associate of Applied Science in General Technology, which can easily transfer to the University of Arkansas, Fort Smith, and be applied towards a Bachelor of Science, Organizational Leadership, or Operations and Logistics, which can be earned online. So you can find out a little bit more about this. I'll leave a link on the website so you can see a little bit more about what it is and what's all involved. I think it's like a 16-week course. Yeah, it's a 16-week course. So if you want to learn more about it, I will leave a credit. I'll leave a link to the student application to do this sort of thing. And you know, if you're real, real interested in bikes and this is a career path you may want to run through, or maybe it's, you know, someone in your family, a child or someone who is really interested in this might want to go in this direction. Years ago, we used to have and I don't know if they still exist or not, there was something called Barnett's Bicycle Institute. And they did training, and that was through United Bike Parts, or I can't remember exactly. I'm not sure if they're still around or not, but there are other places probably that you can do this also if you really want to learn about getting more involved in the bicycle business. It's definitely a career path that I followed many, many years ago. I did not have any of this accreditation. I simply... I knew how to fix bikes and I was good at it. And so, and I grew up as I'm the son of a car mechanic. So I learned a lot of general mechanical skills through that and then went on to pursue my career in bicycles, which got me where I am today, talking to you, of course. So anyway, my tip of the week is going to be to check out the link that I will post on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page and see what you think. And you can read further to learn more about courses and academic paths and possible careers. So anyway, that would be that. What else did I have here on my list? So I was looking through one of the sites that I'm connected to, and there is a piece that comes from, and I just thought this was kind of funny, because, you know, we talk about bicycle commuting all the time on this show, and, you know, why aren't you commuting on your bike? Because, you know, everybody can do this, and it's a great way to keep yourself out of traffic, and to be able to get to work in a much more comfortable style, especially if you look at commuting as it's not like you're racing your bike to work. It's you really like have to kind of change your mindset and your and realize that this is about, you know, just kind of slowly moving your way down the road, using your bike for transportation. So there's a gentleman by the name of George Hahn, that's H-A-H-N, and he has an article here from Momentum Mag about how to ride a bicycle in a suit. So, yeah, that's what the big argument always is. People tell me that, well, I'd ride my bike to work, except, you know, I don't have a shower there. Well, if you don't have a shower there and you're at a fairly large employer, you should talk to that fairly large employer about putting a shower there, because it would make a lot more sense for them to have a place for people who are commuting in on their bicycles to take a quick shower when they get there, if they should need that. But again, if you're not riding super aggressively, and you're just kind of taking your time riding your bike in, then you may not actually need that shower. So it all depends on, you know, how you approach it as far as that goes. So this particular gentleman works from a home office, and his business involves many meetings and outings around Manhattan and parts of Brooklyn. His uniform for public outings is a tailored suit, and his preferred mode for getting around town is on his bicycle. When he speaks to other suit wearers about riding, a common reservation they express is the fear of ruining a good suit or a pair of shoes. His response is always the same. These concerns disappear with the right bike and by riding it leisurely. Didn't I mention this earlier? With an urban utility bike designed for easy upright riding, it's like regular sitting, extremely comfortable. So this is where you put the race bike away, all right, and you ride the bike that is very similar to what you're going to see if you go over to Europe, and you'll see people riding to work and all around, and they're wearing normal clothes, not the Lycra clad racer types. So it's about transportation and practical transportation. And if you're riding in a crowded metropolis, not a, you know, go, go, go speed demon riding that makes you sweat and stress unnecessarily. Riding while wearing a suit is not awkward. On an upright, his weight is placed on his butt as opposed to on a sport bike, which forces the rider to hunch over and put weight on their wrists, elbows, shoulders, and strain on their clothing. And fenders and a chain guard and no strange clothing modifications such as rolling up trouser legs or stuffing them into your socks are required. In New York City, the suit is a standard uniform for a lot of people. The suits and cycling lifestyle demand fabrics that are both beautiful and durable. On the super scale of for wool fabrics such as Super 100s to beyond Super 150s, the higher the number is, the more luxurious the fabric. The Super 100s are nicer than the finest wools from decades ago. His preference for an all-season wool suit is between the 100s and the 120s. Beyond 120s, you get into uber fine wools that are more luxurious but are also a little bit more delicate, which would not be practical. Lower supers are also rebound from wrinkling much better. For the summer months, cotton suits are wonderful as they are durable, light, and breezy. And even better and more durable than cotton, in this gentleman's opinion, the natural wrinkling that occurs with linen is part of its charm. As for shoes, he says, I'm a Blucher man who favors wingtip, brogues, and plain Oxfords. His readers once warned him that he was destined to destroy a good pair of shoes. I can't say how he was riding his bike, but ruining his shoes was definitely a legitimate concern of his. So he would argue that if he was riding incorrectly, only the soles of the shoes ever touched the alloy pedals. After riding this way for several years, he says he has yet to ruin a pair of shoes. He realized that bicycling in a suit and dress shoes is not for everyone. Many work modes don't require a suit, while others just don't like to wear one. The growing chorus of our increased casual world doesn't need another voice. So anyway, this man is a creator, a writer, a crash test dummy on his own website, a journal for men who aren't millionaires but want to like to look good and live well. That would be at georgehahn.com. So it's really, you know, anything is possible if you put a positive mind to it. Yeah, you could ride in a suit. It can be done. So that's one of my mechanical minute and tips of the week for you is how to ride in a suit when you're commuting on your bicycle. All right, let's move on to the next little piece here that we got on the show today. So my next little piece here is we're going to jump right into our content and we're going to talk about these e-scooters. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. So, can you ride an electric scooter on a sidewalk? Well, really kind of depends on where you're from. And the article that came out in the Daily Campus here on the UConn campus was "Sidewalks, Not Speedways. UConn Must Act on E-Scooters." And of course, after I read this article, I couldn't help but make a comment to it, and I'll read my comment to you in just a little bit here. But they're talking about dodging electric scooters is like a contact sport. And posts such as, "I'm so you-know-what sick of these scooters, man. I swear scooter users are having a competition to see how close they can get to me without actually running me over." I feel the same way on this, by the way. These are common complaints on the anonymous messaging platform. Just 3 weeks into the current school year, this particular author, Colin Hamilton, has nearly been hit more times than he can count just walking to class. Sadly, his own experience is shared by many others. Something must be done by the administration to rein in scooters and protect the student body. Of course, I made this comment earlier about the parking service, and they said that scooters don't belong in the sidewalks and they don't belong in the bike racks and that they're going to confiscate them if they see them there. Well, they're going to be real busy because those things are everywhere. They are everywhere. They really are. They've really taken on a new meaning in transportation around campus. And I see them on campus, off campus, but primarily I see them on sidewalks. So that's when we get to the state of Connecticut and the town of Mansfield and what's legal and what's not legal. And the problem is it's not just a campus policy, it's a state law. Connecticut's Public Act 19-162 declares that all e-scooters must follow the same rules as cyclists. Under this ruling, e-scooters are required to come to a full stop at intersections, stop signs, and traffic lights, like they don't. Most importantly, e-scooters must also yield to all pedestrians. This makes e-scooters' current behaviors not only unsafe, but highly illegal. Furthermore, Connecticut has set a speed cap of 20 miles per hour for e-scooters, no matter the time or the place. Exceeding it should result in a ticket, and yet scooters are often seen breaking this limit. Even on sidewalks, a scooter outpaced a car on campus, it's just not an uncommon sighting. Riding with headphones and earbuds in, it's also considered illegal, of course, but it impedes hearing, which puts others at risk. Despite this, both violations continue to be a common sight on the campus. The current way scooters are used at UConn is anything but reasonable. Regardless, of both our state and university's regulations on e-scooters, students are still stuck dodging them daily. The solution to this disconnect between policy and reality is simple. The university must back up its policy and enforce its laws. This means the impounding of wayward scooters and also means holding e-scooter users financially accountable for their reckless behavior. Studies have already shown ticketing to be highly effective at reducing traffic violations. Massachusetts' Click It or Ticket campaign, for instance, reduced motor vehicle crashes by 11%. What's more, ticket revenue from e-scooter violations would flow back into the university as its police department, giving them an implicit motivation to pursue what should be considered their job. UConn could also get more direct stake by charging a fee for the retrieval of an impounded scooter. A $50 retrieval fee would make anyone think twice about taking their scooters along. There's a section called Fairfield Way. The solution is no harsher than having to pay a $50 charge when locked out of a dorm. Only with these actions would the rules actually be recognized by e-scooter users. Only then will students be able to navigate walkways safely without the fear of a reckless collision. UConn has an obligation to protect its students from the dangers of reckless e-scooters. Already it has a policy in place to do so, backed by state law. All that remains for our administration to act. Will UConn do the right thing and keep the pathways safe? Well, anyway, that was the comment that was made. And again, the author was Colin Hamilton. I am with you all the way, Colin. I have also been nearly run down by one of these e-scooters. I talked to my son, Greg, who lives out in Chicago, and he just hates them because he's a pedestrian in Chicago. And the e-scooters and the e-bikes that are out on the sidewalks they're treacherous. They're very, very dangerous. So what did Pedal and Ron have to say about it? I commented on this because I couldn't stay away from it. And I'll get back to state laws and local laws on this in just a moment. And I wrote to them and I said, I have a weekly radio show and podcast at whus.org. This subject comes up all the time, as it does. I receive constant complaints about bicycles, motorized or not, and scooters, mostly motorized, in areas of pedestrian traffic. Thank you for this article and addressing this issue. There are many complaints online about this, and not surprisingly, many responses from law firms addressing it. Now, that was an interesting thing. I Googled e-scooters on sidewalks, and the first three hits that came up on the Google search were all from law firms. And they were all from law firms that were stating what the rules were about the e-scooters and what to do if you're hit by one. Right, right. So if you're hit by one and you have the information of the owner of said scooter, you can sue them, and you can at least sue them for your injuries. And the law firms are so on top of it that, like I said, they were the top three Google hits when I Googled this. So anyway, in the state of Connecticut, it is illegal to ride either of these on public sidewalks unless the town supports the idea. Mansfield is one of those towns. The feeling here at Bicycle Talk is if it has wheels, it belongs on the roads and not on sidewalks. And if for some reason you must use the sidewalk, it is pedestrian speed only. Got that? Pedestrian speed only. That means you got to slow down a lot. It means you got to slow down to a walking pace. And the reason for that is because you really don't want to hit somebody with that e-scooter. The e-scooter, it's heavy. The e-bicycles are heavy. A regular bicycle is heavy. And when you slam into someone at 20 miles an hour, you got a really good chance of taking them down and creating a head injury. So I put in here, it's time to convert the campus to a limited motorized vehicles only to make campus safe again. A head injury due to a collision can be a life-threatening event, and pedestrians do not wear helmets as the scooter and bicycle operators also. They endanger themselves by not doing the same. Time for UConn to update its inner mobility policies and give the scooters and bicycles a safer way to travel. Now, the solution to this is, and I know this sounds very simplistic and maybe naive on my part, but get the motorized vehicles off campus. We have two parking garages right now on campus that can be basically can be approached from the outer edges of campus, and make it so that the inner campus can't be used by motorized cars and trucks unless there are emergency vehicles or utility vehicles to do work on the campus. And let the bikes and the scooters have the roads. Not a difficult situation, really. Not, and a really easy solution. Now, that's just my idea, and I can't say that it's the best idea out there, but it is a strong suggestion I have for the University of Connecticut. It'll also make their campus much more bicycle and pedestrian friendly, which it really needs to do. It needs to update that. There's 20,000 students up there right now, and it's growing rapidly. And by having more and more cars allowed to be on campus, it doesn't solve the problem. It creates a bigger problem. So anyway, thank you to the Daily Campus for printing this article. That really was a nice thing for them to do. I was handed it in my spin class one morning by one of my spin students, who is not a student at the University of Connecticut, but someone who works at the University of Connecticut and is dodging e-scooters all the time. And so they said, you might find this interesting. And I did. So I'm going to ask you, you know, at the end of the show, if you have a comment on this and you would like to comment and let me know how you feel about having motorized scooters and bicycles, or even non-motorized scooters and bicycles, on sidewalks with pedestrians, I'd love to hear what you have to say about it. I'm not a big fan. Unfortunately, the state of Connecticut is, they are very neutral on this. And you'll find that there are lots of cities and towns that have ordinances about riding bicycles and scooters on sidewalks. And then there are a few, like the University of Connecticut and not even the University of Connecticut as much as the town of Mansfield, of which the university is contained within, that do allow it to happen. I don't think it's a good idea. I think it's something that needs to go away. And the only way it can go away is to create a safer infrastructure. And that, I know that there are plans in place for this. I'm a member of Bike Mansfield. We have someone on the board of directors at Bike Mansfield who works on campus and is directly connected to a program that they're trying to start to make the campus safer and to get a Safe Roads accreditation from the League of American Bicycles. And she rides her bike all the time. I ride with her all the time. So Corey's doing a great job, and I'm sure that eventually we'll get this whole issue taken care of. But in the meantime, if you're going 20 miles an hour on an e-scooter or on an e-bike, get out in the traffic where you belong, please. Because that's how fast they're supposed to be going. So why not just go with the flow that's already got wheels on the pavement? Enough said. It's part of a rant. It's also part of my show today. So let's move on to the second part of the rant. And this one is, I'm still here. I gotta go on because I found some other pieces of information on this. And this comes from, what was this? This is from another website here that I found in Canada. Can you ride an electric scooter on the sidewalk? That's the big question. Electric scooter sidewalk laws explain that now, once again, we're in Canada on this. Electric scooter laws can change from place to place. Your city, even your state, might treat riding on sidewalks very differently. So take a moment to check the rules where you live. most important of all. See what the local laws and regulations are. In nearly all major cities, riding on the sidewalk is a decision made by a local government. In Los Angeles, for example, it's illegal to ride on sidewalks. San Francisco hasn't done that yet either. And it also prohibits sidewalk riding unless a sign indicates it in a and it is specifically permitted. Some smaller cities, including parts of Austin, Texas, allowed sidewalks in more peaceful areas, but not in busy ones. So state rules that you need to know. The laws around riding on the sidewalk vary from state to state. For instance, in California, it's almost always illegal to use an e-scooter on the sidewalk under vehicle code. Yay, California. Street riding is illegal in New York City, but outside the city, it's less prohibitive. In Florida, each city can make its own laws, so scooters can be ridden on sidewalks in some cities. And what about federal guidelines? There are no federal laws that directly address sidewalk riding. It's up to state and local governments to decide where the scooters can and cannot be ridden. With this in mind, it's more meaningful to focus on local as opposed to national legislation. So this is one of those things where if you are feeling very strongly about this and you'd like to see a change in your community because, let's say, you got buzzed by an e-scooter, or worse yet, maybe you got taken down by one, you got to put yourself together at a public town meeting, and when it's time for the public to speak, maybe you want to talk about it a little bit and talk about your concerns. Pedestrian safety concerns. Sidewalks are for pedestrian traffic only. The presence of scooters will increase the incidence of pedestrian traffic injuries. In particular, children, older people, or persons with physical disabilities will have a higher chance of being involved in a traffic accident. A scooter that rides too fast or tries to pass through a crowded sidewalk is a hazard to pedestrians, perhaps a number of pedestrians. Most cities, after all, have policies to protect those. And scooter safety risks. There are bumps and curbs and poles and not smooth surfaces to ride electric scooters on. So it becomes more dangerous when people do ride them on the sidewalk. Stopping suddenly or accelerating quickly may cause you to fall, especially if there's a crack or a lip on the pavement. Sidewalks were never really designed for scooters, as bike lanes and roads are, which are flat and easier to navigate. Now, you know, some sidewalks are handicap accessible, so they do have ramps when the road transitions to sidewalk and vice versa. But you know, they're not all set up that way. And you're right, if you are riding an electric scooter on a sidewalk, and as again, it is illegal in most cities, it doesn't mean you're out of options. There are safer alternatives. Choose bike lanes for a safer ride. Whenever possible, use a designated bike lane. Shared paths and multi-use trails can be used with your e-scooter. On the road where permitted, if there are no bike lanes, many states allow electric scooters to be ridden on the roads with a speed limit of 25 miles per hour or lower. Stay on the right side of the road, obey traffic signals, and always wear a helmet for added protection. There's things you can do. You really have to, if you're going to be using that electric scooter or that electric bicycle on the road, and now that all the electric bicycles have, you know, increased speeds and increased ranges on them, which is really wonderful, you can really get into a city situation and you can stay at the speed limit, you know, because those bikes will go 25 to 28 miles an hour. The scooters go at least 20 miles an hour, some much faster. So it's, it's really better to be on the road. I have a thing where if it has wheels, you should be on the road. I've even seen, you know, people on skateboards, longboards, that sort of thing. They can go as fast as a car can go. They move right along on those things. So, you know, why not, if it has wheels and you can go that fast, be out where the other vehicles with wheels are? Just makes a lot more sense. best practice for sharing space. If you need to pass the pedestrian, offer a friendly heads up or a sound. If you have a bell, I have a bell on my bike. I'm big with the bell. Never push or dodge through groups of people. It's super tight squeezes, the safest. It makes no sense. And the safest is to dismount and walk your scooter. It's also worth remembering that sidewalks are first and foremost for walking. Parking your electric scooter the right way. When you're done with your ride, you need to leave your scooter somewhere. Parking your scooter properly is super important, just as important as riding. Sidewalks and doorways are off limits because they could cause problems or result in fines. My suggestion to you, if you are a UConn student and you are using an e-scooter, ask them where they would like you to properly park the scooter. When you go into, let's say, your dorm and or your class. And, just ask them, look, this is how I get around and I want to do it right. And I don't want you to impound my scooter or my bicycle. So could you please tell me where it is I'm supposed to put it? Because by the looks of that article that I just read to you guys, it sounds like there isn't real good plan on that. So that can be a problem. So make sure that you find a place that you can legally park your scooter and or bicycle. And if you get into an accident with someone, you have to stop, man. You got to stop and you got to make sure they're okay. If you hit somebody at 20 miles an hour, you will take them down hard and fast. And you may be wearing a helmet, but they may not. So the best thing, of course, is to avoid doing this in the first place. Big sigh. That's all I got. Riding your bike or scooter on the sidewalk is just... it's just not a good idea. For the most part in the United States, riding an electric scooter is illegal on the sidewalk, except if local laws permit you to do so. But there are better, safer alternatives, including protected bike lanes, shared use paths, and low-stress streets. If this is a major concern to you, talk to your town about increasing the infrastructure in the town and getting places that are safer to ride with the scooter. If you're intimidated by riding your scooter out on the road, think about how intimidated the pedestrians are at you having your scooter on the sidewalk. Figure it out. This isn't that hard. So anyway, that's what I got on the whole scooter issue. I said I would address it. I did address it. And now I'd like to talk about some other things which I have found, which are kind of fun. And I can talk about before we get on to the other piece of the show today, which is the UCI World Cycling Championships. Exciting weekend that we just had. Exciting week, really, because it goes all week long, starting from the time trial on. But New York City is getting a Dutch-style bicycle hub, and it's a game changer. So that's kind of a neat thing. And if you have ever been over in any of the Dutch cities, you'll see that bicycles are really the source of transportation. And there's more people on bicycles than anything else. When you go to Copenhagen or Amsterdam or any of the other places over there. And even now, Paris is starting to become a lot more bicycle friendly over in France. So it's just really starting to happen. So later this year, the urban mobility startup known for rethinking micromobility for infrastructure will open New York's first indoor bicycle parking and service hub, just like they have in Europe. Yay. Located at One Sunset, a new development on the 25th Street right next to the R train, the facility is billed as a Dutch-inspired dense facility that can park a large number of bikes while providing commuters with essential services like charging, battery swapping, and quick basic repairs. The ONI project is more than just parking the lot for bikes. It's a statement. It's a new kind of bicycle facility. While Oney has already made its mark with compact pods and minis scattered around the city, the hub at One Sunset marks the company's first foray into large-scale, full-service bicycle center. Housed in a 1,300-square-foot ground-floor access space, the facility will feature a bright, welcoming environment furnished with modern amenities that make riding easier and more convenient. With around-the-clock access and 95 free, secure parking spaces for bikes, including accommodations for large-format bicycles and battery-free bicycles, the hub is poised to become a vital link in Brooklyn's micro-mobility ecosystem. What a brilliant idea. You know, there's enough buildings out there with empty space that could be used for something like this. We actually have one, for anyone who is interested in knowing this. We have one in the Transportation Center in Storrs, Connecticut, right in downtown Storrs. It was an idea and a dream of Lon Holkren, who is Bike Mansfield in Mansfield, retired engineer from the town of Mansfield. And when the Transportation Center was built, he wanted to put in this center for bicycles, so you could ride your bike in and you could even take a shower there and you can lock your bike up safely. It's very, very nice. I actually was invited with him out to a lunch down in New Haven with the architect when they were putting together the idea of how they were going to build this thing. So cool stuff, and we have it right here. And a lot of people just don't even know about it. But if you are interested in finding out more about it, check in with Bike Mansfield, and Lon or someone from Bike Mansfield will return to you and let you know how it all works. It's a pretty cool thing. I believe there is a monthly rental situation there. And but it's very minimal, and you know, for getting the hot shower when you ride your bike in, if you are coming in from the outer confines of Storrs, you're probably going to climb a pretty big hill to get there, so you might be a little sweaty, and this would be a way to handle that sort of thing. Of course, if you're a UConn student or if you're someone who works at UConn, there's shower facilities all over campus between the recreation department and the new rec center, and there's lots of places you could take advantage of that sort of thing. So anyway, the hub sits along 4th Avenue Bikeway, one of Brooklyn's most heavily traveled bike lanes, and next to the 25th Street subway station, enabling a variety of multimodal commuter patterns. It's also noteworthy for being the first public bike parking and service center to be included as part of a community benefits agreement, a new private development. Oney explains initial planning began in 2021, and their design team worked together with Totem and the building's border development team to locate and design the facility. It's very cool. If you get a chance, you can go on to momentummag.com and you get to see a picture of it and how it all works. It's kind of cool. They have some pictures there and all. So it's more than just a convenient bike garage. It's a model for urban resilience, climate-minded transit, a community-first planning with essential services, modern design, and an eye toward inclusion. The project offers a glimpse of what a truly bike-friendly New York might look like. New York is on top of it. They're moving forward much faster than a lot of other major cities. And it's nice to see, seeing as large as New York is and how much traffic they have and how insane it is to ride a bicycle there. It's really nice to see all the improvements that they're putting together to make bicycling much safer. So pretty cool stuff. Thought I'd bring it up because it just looked like a really cool idea, and always shouting out to New York City when they do something great, and that is definitely cool. So earlier I had talked about bicycle racing and professional bicycle racers having more incidents of death. There was Muriel Fuhrer. Fuhrer was a Swiss junior cyclist who died after an accident at her home world championship in Zurich. About an hour and a half had passed between her crash and the 18-year-old being found and treated by paramedics. Riders were immediately critical of the response, with a police investigation underway to the apparent failings. And, you know, it made me very sad to think that a young girl with so much potential was left alone, Australian rider Chloe Hossink told The Athletic last December. It's just heartbreaking, honestly. There's a time for silence and there's a time when you're meant to be angry. You're meant to say things just to help it that need things need to be better. The past 12 months, some concrete changes have been implemented. It's not known yet whether a safer safety tracker could have saved Fuhrer's life, but the delay caused by the absence of such technology in Zurich did nothing to help her prognosis. At this week's World Championships in Rwanda, where Fuhrer will be honored and the number she wore, 84, retired from women's junior road race events, every rider will have a mandatory tracker installed on their bike. The regulation appears to be a direct response to Fuhrer's death. So progress has not been linear. Just last month at a test event for technology at the Tour de Romandie Feminine, five teams were excluded from the first stage following a dispute with the sport's governing body, UCI, over its implementation. In a joint statement, teams blamed the UCI for a lack of consultation, arguing it was unfair to only ask a single rider per team to carry the tracker. Oh, that's terrible. Everybody should have the tracker. That's horrible. So anyway, they're getting there. Jonas Vingegaard, we've heard that name. He's obviously one of cycling's biggest stars, a two-time winner of the Tour de France and a victor at this month's Vuelta a España. The 28-year-old has become increasingly outspoken on safety issues. I've read some of the things he's put down. When a figure of that standing states he would not let his children race, it would serve as a siren to the sport. So, yeah, Jonas says, to be honest, if my daughter or son asked the question, Daddy, can we race? The answer is no, Vingegaard told a Belgian newspaper at the Volta a Algarve in March. The way the sport is now, it's just too dangerous. In general, I would say that everyone in cycling needs to release the scale of the safety problem. Realize the scale of the safety problem. It's still not the case, and it's at this point. The UCI needs to start looking at this a little bit more carefully. I've made comments about this before. I really think that promoters need to be a lot more careful about the way their races finish. A lot of these races finish into towns where there's lots of twisting and turning. There are some roads that are just not good for cycling that are used in the races. And I understand that every race has its character and its style as far as that goes. But there are some things where they talked to a pro racer and he said he had the feeling that things had escalated. There was a feeling of things being totally uncontrolled. Some races, the roads are terrible for cycling. Earlier this season, he took part in two bike races where there were cars on the descent coming up the road. They were doing 80 kilometers per hour, and then all of a sudden there were cars. It was completely insane. This should not happen in professional bicycle racing. I know that professional bike racing is out on the open roads, but those open roads need to be closed. And also, they need to really, really do something about some of these crazy finishes with the really, really sharp turns. And, you know, you've got these lead-out trains coming in at 45 miles an hour. you know, trying to get their sprinter across that line, and they're throwing 90-degree turns in. What are they thinking? Yeah, it's real exciting to watch everybody fall down. This isn't NASCAR, folks. This is bicycle racing. Anyway, so this is an issue, and it's such an issue that the New York Times wrote an article about it because of all the people who have been hurt and or killed racing their bicycles. There's, you know, people that have been tossed off the roads and not found for half an hour to an hour and a half afterwards because no one really saw it happen. It's total insanity. So maybe the trackers are an answer and a good idea as far as that goes. But this, it seems like there has been a big uptick in bicycle crashes in professional racing. I think the speed has increased, as I was talking to my class this morning about this, because this article became a discussion in class. The speeds are getting faster. The last 5 years, the Tour de France, the Giro d'Italia, the Vuelta a España have all been faster than the previous years. So why is that? Well, there's a number of reasons why. There's technology issues. There's also, there's a younger cyclists that are real faster than the older ones used to be. And, you know, that makes a difference. Technology on the bikes makes it so they can go faster. There's a lot of reasons why it happens. But anyway, it happens. And some things need to be dealt with here. Let's go on to the World Championships. The World Championships were this past week and weekend. And it was really exciting. Guess what? Tadej Pogačar wins his second world championship title in Rwanda. By the way, it was beautiful there. Nice roads, interesting places, cobblestone finishes, up steep grades, just classic good road racing. 14% grades, you know, nasty stuff, 15% grades, really, really great, great road course. I thought it was really, really, really cool. And just Tadej Pogačar is Tadej Pogačar. He's the unstoppable Tadej Pogačar. He took time off from the Tour de France and he trained just for the Worlds. That's what he was looking to do. 267.5 kilometer race in Kigali, Rwanda. And, he lit up Kigali's climbs with a trademark long-range attack to claim a second consecutive men's road race world title on Sunday. There was an air of inevitability surrounding the event in Rwanda, and the Slovenian cemented his legacy among cycling's all-time greats. Pogačar triumphed as the world champions were staged in Africa for the first time, with hundreds of thousands cheering from the roadside. The fans were incredible. It was really cool. Remco Evenepoel, who won the individual time trial title for the third year in a row last Sunday, finished second, 1 minute and 28 seconds off the pace, after suffering some mechanical problems. Boy, he was upset too. I'm just banging on his handlebars on his bike. He was definitely having some bike problems. The Irish rider Ben Healy took third place, another 48 seconds back behind Evenepoel. It was Ireland's first podium finish in the event since Sean Kelly also claimed the bronze medal in 1989. Britain's Tom Pidcock finished 10th, 9 minutes and 7 seconds behind the winning time. Pogačar, whose grimace turned into a smile in the final lap, is the third rider in the last two decades to successfully defend the rainbow jersey after Slovakia's Peter Sagan, who won three in a row from 2015 to 2017, and Julian Alaphilippe, who won 2020 and 2021. There's some great, if you go to, I think I'm on The Guardian. If you go to The Guardian, there's some great pictures from there. There's great YouTube video recaps, although the transmissions were not real good in Rwanda, so some of the footage was a little weird. I was trying to watch it live, and they were having a lot of trouble, and I got cut out a bunch of times. I was watching it on YouTube, but still, it was just very, very exciting. And a really, really cool race. But Tadej Pogačar definitely put the hammer down. He put it down early And that's basically what happened. It was over very about halfway into the race is when it happened. He had a few people go with him, including Del Toro from Mexico. I thought that was going to be a big moment because Del Toro, 21-year-old phenom from Mexico, he has been real strong and real promising and shows to be one of the more promising new riders coming up. Pogacar burned him right off the back of his wheel, and he ended up finishing way back. So, you know, amazing, amazing, amazing. In the, let me make sure I get this right. In the elite women's road race, the Magdalene Valeris-Mill from Canada won 4 hours and 34 minutes and 48 seconds, 23 seconds ahead of Niamh Fisher from New Zealand, and Margarita Victor Garcias Canales from Spain, 27 seconds back. So the women's road race was pretty close. It was definitely fun to watch again. There's lots of highlights on YouTube. If you're a big YouTube fan, I think you can find lots of entertainment there. You'll be able to watch all of them. But what you really need to watch, if you can find it, is check out the men's junior race. The junior race, men's junior race. That was an exciting race. That was pretty cool. So anyway, I'm not going to get into the details of it because I am certainly just running out of time. We're getting near the end of the show, and I need to talk a little bit more about the events coming up. Project Mayhem Cyclocross Series is on and running. Last weekend, there was an event in Portland, Connecticut. This weekend coming up, it's Newtown, Connecticut. Newtown Cross on October 5th. And the following weekend, it's Mansfield Hollow Cyclocross right here in Mansfield at Mansfield Hollow State Park. It will be the 42nd year of that race. I am the race director, and I'm tearing my hair out trying to get things all in a row, because if you've ever been an event director, you know what I'm talking about. Keep in mind, there's also the River Valley Cross Series that's running from August 24th through the October 19th, based out of Massachusetts. So if you're looking for more cross racing, there's tons of cross racing going on. And let's see here. We're through this. We're all into our finishing points. The world's more big-time bicycle racing at our fingertips. What a great weekend for bike racing, if you like watching bike racing. And how do you feel about the introduction of e-scooters and e-bikes on sidewalks? I don't like it. I don't like it. Obviously, I think you probably got a little bit of a taste for that today in my show. I'm not a big fan. The wheels belong on roads. Wheels do not belong on sidewalks. That's just kind of my way of looking at it. The only wheels that belong on a sidewalk are the ones that are on a wheelchair, because they do belong there. So give me your opinion. Send out something to Bicycle Talk at BicycleTalk1@gmail.com, or leave a message on my Facebook account here and at Bicycle Talk. You can definitely put something down there in the comments, or I will have this show up on my Bicycle Talk YouTube account coming up hopefully in a few days. I'll get that uploaded. I want to hear what you have to say, because I think we need to address this issue. You know, the world is changing fast, and the electric bicycle and the electric scooter industry is growing really fast, and it's really hard to regulate what's going on there. So let me know how you feel about it. This clip from our friends at the League of American Bicycles. Bicycling is freedom. Life is better for everyone when more people ride bikes. The League is making bicycling an easier and safer option for more people, because when more people bike, people are happier and healthier, our communities are safer and friendlier, and our planet is greener. Together, we can all help people know the joy of bicycling. I'll say it again, it won't be my last time. You need to get loud. Get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic and dangerous roads and the price of gas and lack of places to safely ride your bike. And hey, take the pedal and run challenge. Park that car or truck for a day. Ride your bike instead. You just might surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is Pedal and Ron. Remember, keep your rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. Really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thanks for listening. See you next week. Get on your bikes and ride!